Hey, it's Duff Dixon, and welcome to the Live Wide Awake podcast. Thank you for being one of our listeners in 88 countries around the world. Today, we're speaking with Dan Sherrod-Smith, the founder and CEO of My Mother Tree, the world's first money carbon calculator. They help businesses and individuals to maximize their impact by greening finances so that we can fund the future that we want. Now, this is such an important topic because, for example, when we include financial emissions, the average carbon footprint for an SME doubles. Previously, Dan built Look After My Bills, which achieved the best ever deal on Dragon's Den. And in this episode, we talk about how we can decarbonize businesses and individuals' money carbon, which pockets of money and investments hold the power currently, how we can address the unconscious challenges and blocks to moving money, and so much more. Okay, it's time to live wide awake. Okay, well, Dan, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. I am really excited about this topic because money is such a big one when it comes to sustainability and the climate, and we're going to dive deeply into that. But before we do that, I'd love to share or to start with a little bit of your journey and how you ended up in a career looking at social and environmental causes and focuses.
Steph, it's great to be here. Thanks so much for having me. So in terms of my journey, I was on the founding team of Look After My Bills, which had the best ever deal on Dragon's Den. We saved the British public £127 million in 3 years through switching them to better energy deals. And towards the end of my time at Look After My Bills, when it became a very established company, it was no longer a startup, my wife became pregnant. And it just really made me question where I was spending my time. And I kind of took the leap and left Look After My Bills and just started interviewing people, just listening to their stories, you know, CEOs, CFOs, but also just mums and dads and people in their 20s starting their career and listening to how climate change is impacting their lives and their jobs. And then my wife came up with the idea of something called the Climate Challenge, which was about 3 years ago, was 30 challenges over 30 days for groups of about 8 people at a time. And we ran 5 of these challenges, 5 groups. So we did all sorts of different challenges. We went vegan for the day. We got rid of single-use plastic. We looked at our carbon footprint. And the thing that shocked people the most in these groups, and me included on the first climate challenge, it was new for me, was when we realized where our money was going. And that was where our banks are lending money and where our pensions are invested. And I looked at my own pension. 2% of my pension was in BP and Shell, just things that I'd never choose to invest in. You know, 1% was in British American Tobacco. There was money in weapons. There was money in gambling. I couldn't believe it. I was shocked. And then I also looked at Look After My Bills bank account. Look After My Bills were banking with Lloyds, and Lloyds put £1 billion a year or more into fossil fuel investments since 2016. So it was a real shock. So that was the launch pad for Mother Tree. Mother Tree now is a money carbon calculator. We're pretty sure it's the world's first and only money carbon calculator, a bit like you have a lifestyle carbon calculator. How we get around and our choice of diet has an impact. Well, actually, our money has a huge impact, both in terms of carbon because of how banks and pensions are investing, but also in terms of the world we're going to get in the next 10 to 15 years, because you know this money is going to companies that are able to expand their activities by getting more money from banks and from pensions. So that's what we do.
Yeah, so much I want to unpack there, and it's such important work that you're doing, and I love that it's the first money carbon calculator. I think that's super clear, but maybe you can also just unpack a little bit more about actually how does it work and how did you build it and that kind of thing so we can understand a little bit more about the carbon calculator.
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of how it works, so there's a couple of things to this. The first is just the straight up methodology. So we're looking at banks' carbon footprints. So they're getting better at reporting on their carbon footprints. They're pretty robust at reporting on what we'd call scope 1 and scope 2, which is their direct activities, things like energy used to, you know, the energy that they use for their own operations. But they're also starting to report on scope 3, which is the supply chain emissions. What they're not very good at is reporting on what they're lending, where they're lending money and the impact that has. And so what we've built is a tool to understand where banks are lending money. So we can see through things like trading platforms, you know, which bank is the lead lender for specific projects. So we can get much more clarity in terms of what the overall carbon footprint is for a given bank. And then from an individual perspective, so you know, if you have £1,000 in a current account, then you have, you're a stakeholder, you're giving that money to a bank, you're giving them agency. In effect, you're giving them more money to sort of balance their books on the lending side. And if you have £1,000 in that bank, and let's say that bank has £100,000, then you have 1% of that bank's sort of money in. And so we say, okay, well, you have 1% of that bank's carbon footprint. So that's the basic calculation, very similar for pensions. So that's the kind of calculation that puts together. In terms of the work that we do, we also are able to go beyond that. So we look at where, you know, typically we work with businesses, but we do work with individuals occasionally, but where, you know, that money's going, so the carbon footprint, but we're also able to look at 11 other values, things like biodiversity, reducing the gender pay gap, water conservation, poverty. So we're really looking at what this money's doing to the world and does it align to your values? And then we work with our clients to make sure that if it isn't aligned to those values, we switch the bank. We make it really easy to make those changes, often unlocking more money. So we're able to get better interest rates from certain banks and crucially making sure that money is going to places you want to see thrive in the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, it's so fascinating. And I honestly think I was looking up and reading a lot of your posts and some of the client reviews and stuff, and people are horrified when they find this out, you know, and you would have been too when you found out that 2% of your income was going to fossil fuels and tobacco and gun and, you know, like, I mean, that's just insane. And it's something that we just don't think about. And yet it also feels like a really black box. So I'm so interested because, you know, yes, you guys are doing all this hard work, which is amazing, and you're largely working with businesses, but like as an individual, how would I even be able to begin to figure out, okay, well, what's my bank actually doing? Like, can I get information to or access to understanding where they're mainly putting their money, or like, is that really unavailable?
It is a black box, unfortunately. It's very, very hard as an individual to figure out exactly what's going on. From a banking perspective, you know, I'd say look at something like mymothertree.com. It's a bit of a shameless plug, but there isn't much out there to give you that clarity in terms of what's going on. And so that's why we built this, you know, this free tool for people to see exactly what's going on with their money from a carbon perspective. From a pension side, it's slightly less opaque. Interestingly, there's a lot of information online for given funds, and most likely if you're invested in the fund, the information will be online and you can see the top 10 companies that that fund is invested in. So at least you can kind of see the tip of the iceberg. Typically it's about 10 to 15% of the overall pension, but you can see a little bit about what's going on there. So that it has slightly less of a black box, but both of them, banks nor pension providers, want to provide this information. They want to keep it opaque from us, but we think it's really important when we're making informed decision to see this information so we can make a really clear decision on what's happening with our money.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so important. And so with like ESG reporting and these types of things, is any of this disclosed in that on with banks or with pension funds? Yeah. Is there any sort of information that's available publicly, or is it really just, you know, not there's nothing there? I mean, aside from their big statements like, oh, we're no longer investing in these industries, which, you know, it can't happen overnight also. And I think that's another big thing, you know, how much of these big claims are actually being implemented and adjusted in the near, you know, future when we've got the money sitting there.
The big claims is a real double-edged sword. So on the positive side, it's fantastic that banks like Barclays and Lloyds have come out and said, we're not going to put money into new fossil fuel projects. That's a really important step. Unfortunately, it doesn't go far enough. And when you look at the details of those statements, there's an incredible amount of loopholes for them to continue to invest far too much money into fossil fuels. Let's take Barclays. So Barclays have invested about 10 to 15 billion pounds into fossil fuels every single year since 2016. It's a colossal amount. Their statement says no money into new fossil fuel projects, but that still gives them 10 to 15 billion pounds each year leeway to keep putting money into fossil fuel projects. It's not good enough from Barclays. They need to go further. I emailed the chairman of Barclays, Nigel Higgins, to ask him what he's doing about this about a year ago. His climate team sent me a 4,000-word response about their plans for 2050. Nigel Higgins will be 97 years old in 2050. It's not his problem. And so to make it his problem, and given the lack of sort of teeth behind the statements that you know, Barclays have put out. We think we need to get money and customers out of that bank as quickly as possible to speak the language of Nigel Higgins right now so that he changes his position and moves that 10 to 15 billion pounds that's propping up the fossil fuel industry into places like renewable energy. So we have the infrastructure and the energy produced within each given country, which is possible, solar, wind, batteries. Because if we get the funding there, this can happen at a very, very rapid clip.
Absolutely. And so I think that's such a big piece, right? We have to empower both individuals and businesses to move their money. So the first thing is awareness and education, which is just phenomenal, the work that you're doing. And obviously everyone listening here is probably equally as horrified as we were when we found all this out. But then further to that, what is preventing people from switching? So there's one thing to be like, oh my goodness, this is happening, da 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 da. But like then there's barriers there before people actually then move their money. So maybe you can help to address some of those, both from a business and an individual perspective, and how you help, you know, because I know you're helping with solving that.
Yeah. So from, I mean, business and individual perspective is quite similar, given businesses is just people making decisions. So it's still individuals making those choices. So from a subconscious level, there's what we call the green fog, and that's FOG. So that's frustration, overwhelm, and guilt. There's a frustration that, you know, why should it be me? Why not my neighbor or my rival business making this change? Why do I have to spend time on it? That's a frustrating feeling. And we don't always, it's subconscious. We don't always realize that that's going on. There's an overwhelm, which is the O of fog. It is overwhelming. When I realized what was happening with my own money and with my business's money that look after my bills, it's overwhelming. It's like, hang on a minute, we've got this bank that works for us and, you know, it's what we need as a business. And yet it's completely undermining what we stand for as individuals and for our values. So that's an overwhelming feeling. And also then to go and do the research, it's overwhelming. There's so much noise. There's so much greenwashing going on. You know, Barclays and Lloyds releasing these statements about no new investment in fossil fuel. Unless it's no investment full stop in fossil fuel, it's not good enough. So there's an argument that that's also an element of greenwashing. So it's very, you know, that is overwhelming. And then there's this sense of guilt, and it's not a friendly feeling. It's not a nice feeling to think, oh, I should be greener, but I'm not, and I'm not making those changes. And actually that does lead to inertia. And whether we realize that consciously, that is going on subconsciously. And that applies to individuals and that applies to the people making decisions within a business. And then we look at the kind of more sort of conscious or maybe logical reasons for switches not happening. One is time. You know, we are time poor. We live in a busy society. There's lots of things going on. And also, you know, it's not the most sort of interesting, sexy of subjects. It's far more fun to, you know, make sure we've got time with friends or time with family, let alone looking at the bills and there and switching the bank. So that there is just this sense of time and priority. And typically to do this right takes about 50 hours of research, both to make sure, you know, the greenwashing is not going on and then to do the switch. And that applies to both individuals and businesses. The steps are quite similar. Then there's this sense of, will the new bank work for my business or as an individual? That's a complex piece for businesses. You know, it's a very important to make sure that the bank is functional and works on a day-to-day basis and delivers what the business needs. And that just takes working through. So that's exactly what we do with clients. We work through that for the businesses. So we get those business requirements spot on. Then there's a piece around risk. You know, there's this sense of, what if I move to a bank that's less well-known? You know, household name, there's safety in household name. That's, unfortunately, that's just a perceived risk. When we look at what the Bank of England has been putting out, it said no bank is too big to fail, which means they're on their own. There's no more, you know, whether it's Barclays or not a household name, they've got the same level of protections now. So the risk landscape has changed. And as long as the bank is FSCS protected, then it has that kind of base level protection, which most UK banks do. There's a few elements to this. And then the other piece is just savings. So what we do for our clients is we negotiate on behalf. We represent £290 million on behalf of our clients. We're able to negotiate directly with the banks for rates that are going to really work for the business and individual. So actually we can, you know, we can unlock more money by doing these tasks.
Yeah, fantastic. And so that's both for a business and individual aspect. Very, very clear. Green fog is excellent analogy acronym that really, I think, is more than just, can be applied to more than just this like money. I think in general, sustainability, people go through that exact, you know, process of frustration, overwhelm, guilt, and then really needs quite a lot to then get to that like action and the empowerment phase that does follow. But 50 hours is very overwhelming for a lot of people. So it's fantastic that my mother tree is there to help, to assist, to, you know, because you've done a lot of the hard work. And so, yeah, I think for those listening, really do go check that out and see. But it's more than just banks as well. So what are the other pieces that we need to be looking at? So you've mentioned banks, you've mentioned pension, but I know there's other ones that you discuss and address and encourage people to look at. So what are the other pockets that or companies that we interact with we need to be looking at?
The other big two that we focus on are energy and insurance. So energy is really important because this is our base system that powers our society. And if we're drawing our energy from fossil fuels or from imported, let's say, gas, that's an issue. That's an issue. We already have the technology. We haven't reached scale for it, but we already have the technology to replace those elements with renewable energy. And so we need to show demand. We need to show demand from the market that we want renewable energy. There are providers out there that provide 100% renewable energy. They generate it themselves. People like Good Energy, Ecotricity. So, you know, this market exists and we need to show that there's demand to expand it. So that's energy. We focus on that for clients. And then the other one is insurance. Insurance is huge. It's such an important part to play here. In Vietnam, a few years ago, the coal industry had all of the finance it needed from banks, from pensions, from other areas to expand the coal mining activities in that country. But the insurance industry refused to insure coal mines in Vietnam. And overnight, that money shifted 90% into renewable energy.
Wow.
So if, you know, these are big levers. Banks, pensions, insurance. Insurance is a huge lever we have available to us to make sure we're no longer insuring projects that destroy the world and ultimately lead to higher insurance and, you know, more bills, but, you know, more pain for people. And actually, if we can show that as a signal, again, that will start to shift society in the next couple of years.
And so, but how did that really happen then? Was that driven by consumers from like demanding this from the insurance company? Was it from the individuals within those insurance companies? And how can we, you know, like as people listening and how can we actually force or support more insurance companies to refuse to insure companies that are expanding or damaging biodiversity or fossil, like expanding fossil fuels?
So there's two things. The first is as an individual selecting an insurance company that's not insuring on a broad scale, places that are, you know, fossil fuel projects, as an example, or places that are destroying biodiversity. So we can choose that. There are insurance companies out there already that are refusing to insure fossil fuel projects. That's a really important signal as an individual, as a business, that we can take. The second is from the insurance companies themselves. So that's something we have less influence over. But when they look at their models in terms of what's happening in the next 10 to 30 years, are there places that are no longer insurable, you know, in effect, stranded assets? And my argument is fossil fuels are no longer insurable, but I don't have influence over, you know, the chairman and chairwomen of the insurance companies. So the way we play it is we make sure we're getting people to the insurance companies that already have those models that are saying fossil fuels are no longer insurable.
Thank you. That's, yeah, some great steps there that we can do and look into. And so I understand, obviously, you're mainly focused on the UK, but do you have plans to expand? You know, obviously, we have a lot of listeners in Asia, but like in other countries around the world as well. So, yeah, what is sort of the expansion plans to help more people with this?
Yes. So we work with clients worldwide. We have clients in the US, Canada, quite a few clients in the EU. We haven't got anyone in Asia yet, but we'll go where the demand is. So if there's demand there, we will obviously look at those countries as well. Our main block is in the UK. 80% of our clients are UK based. So that is sort of where we've started, but we absolutely are. The systems and the principles that we run apply globally.
Outside of money, which as we've, you know, established is a huge component, what else do you see as sort of some of the big levers that we need to shift and focus on? Because the thing is, a lot of solutions that we need to curb the climate crisis and to protect biodiversity already exist. It's really about the amplification and the moving of the money into those. So maybe you can, yeah, just share a little bit more on what you see there outside just us as individuals or as businesses, like extracting money, but then what else can we do and how can we actually then make sure the money goes to where it needs to go?
I think that's the exact point that we need to land, is it's about amplification. There's no new technology that we need as individuals to start to solve this crisis. So, you know, we need to make sure our choice of energy is driving a renewable option. Where our money goes, I would argue, is the most important choice. But of course, there are others. You know, who we vote for is incredibly important. The conversations that we're having, so influencing others. And there's an amazing scientist called Catherine Hayhoe who writes about this. And I would encourage people, if they're interested in how to influence others on this subject, to look up Catherine Hayhoe, because our influence has a far bigger impact than perhaps we realize. I think diet becomes really important. We cannot sustain a sort of levels of meat that we're eating. And we already know that there's healthy diet, sort of plant-based healthy diets available. And so, you know, trying to start to cut down meat and following plant-based diets becomes a really essential part. It's a whole different story, get me started on that. But yeah. When I sort of looked at what's actually happening in factory farms, that was the end for me in terms of eating meat and dairy, because it's not just the environmental impact, it's also the impact on these animals that we share the world with. And it's absolutely devastating, the conditions that they're subjected to. So I just couldn't stand for that. So there is this, you know, there are obviously different elements here, but I would say the key things are sort out the money, sort out the energy, and think about the conversations and the influence that you have, which includes the vote and then the diet.
Yes, no, very clear and important focuses there. And so, you know, I guess looking in the next 5 to 10 years, are you hopeful? Where do you feel we're going to be? Do you think that there's enough momentum behind what you're doing and the movement that you're part of to really see it, the shift that we need in the next decade?
I'm hopeful, but there's a hell of a lot of work we've got to do. So politicians are failing us right now. Big business are failing us right now. So we need to pull up our sleeves and show that there's action that we can take right now, which will change the game. I'm hopeful because once we start taking that action, once we hit the tipping point, things will start to change quite quickly. Once we get the funding to the right places, within just a couple of years, the temperature will stabilize. Within 20 to 30 years, the planet will start to heal. And so there is this, genuinely, if we can get our systems moving in a way that work for the planet, and it's possible, we know the routes, we've got the technology, we've got to get the financing there. It's possible that we move in sort of a 30-year cycle to a planet that is regenerating, that is coming back to life. And what a beautiful part, you know, what it would be, such a beautiful thing to play is, you know, to know that we've been part of that movement. That's the kind of planet that I want to be in. That's where I'd love to be in 30 years. So I am hopeful, but we've got a long, long way to go to get there.
Good. No, I agree. And I have to stay hopeful and positive, because otherwise I think it gets a little bit dire sometimes, especially when you know so much and you're working in the space. And so I guess, yeah, you must have had moments where it sort of felt like an uphill challenging battle, maybe eco-anxiety, maybe even eco-frustration. So what do you sort of do in those moments to realign and to top up your energy to really keep going?
Well, you know, I get down, I get anxious about this. I was speaking to one of the lead scientists in the UK last week, Dr. Hugh Montgomery. And, you know, on our current trajectory, there's 4 to 15 years until civilization collapses. I get down when I hear that stuff. That's a hard, you know, it's a hard but important message to hear. I keep going for a couple of things. I have a wonderful son, he's almost 3 years old. And so, you know, I'm kind of fighting to be part of creating a world that where he can thrive and his generation can thrive. I love nature. So anytime I can get out to nature, whether it's a lake or a forest, or, you know, I grew up by the seaside, and just connect back with the natural world really helps. I meditate a lot, you know, just trying to calm the mind, because there are things that we can influence and there are things that we can't. I can't influence the big systems. I can't influence the impact of AI or the threat of nuclear war, but I can influence, you know, raising awareness to what our funding is doing, to what our banks are doing, and then what that means and what we as individuals and as businesses can do about it. So that's where I focus my time. I also take solace in the fact that my job is about reducing carbon, is about creating a better system ultimately. And so, you know, that really keeps me going because that's what I do every day. So yeah, those are probably the elements that help. And then also just to, you know, finding time to actually have fun, to have a bit of a complete break from it. So I do improvisation. I do improv on Tuesday nights, and it's just just trying to find ways to be a bit silly and just to take the head out of the space of what can be quite a tough place to be at times.
Yeah, no, I think that's very true. I started prioritizing joy. That's what, like, I always come back to. It's like, okay, what can I do to just prioritize joy? And that's also for me a lot of the time, just like hanging out with my daughter, because she's just this gorgeous little 8-month-old and just brings me into the present moment like nothing else. So I think it's a beautiful gift. How do you think we can live wide awake?
Gosh, what a great question that is. How can we live wide awake? I think it's lots of the stuff we've talked about. I think it's taking time to get clear on the facts, you know, what is actually going on for our life and where are the big impact things that we have influence on and what can we do about those big impact things. That's why I zeroed in on the money, because it's such a big impact and actually it's not that big a change to make in terms of banks and pensions. It can feel overwhelming, but actually once you take the action as an individual, especially, it's not that difficult. Pension companies will try and make it difficult. It's not. And so I think it's about understanding, you know, where are really big impact things that we can do and then taking action on them. And, you know, even if you get distracted or it doesn't happen, returning to it and accepting, you know, nobody's perfect. It's not a kind of all or nothing. It's not perfect or nothing. It's just steps. It's just little steps, little things to get better each day, each month, but getting really clear on the facts, on the impact. Be part of living wide awake. What a colossal question that is. I think that's a whole, that's like hours to unpack.
It's true. Well, that is the name of the podcast. So I always have to ask people that. And it's great because I've never had the same answer twice. Your episode, I think, 87, and I've never had the same answer twice. So I do, it's my favorite question. Well, Dan, thank you so much for sharing and for your clarity and for the work you're doing. I really appreciate it, and for you taking the time with us today.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Three things I'm taking away from this conversation with Dan. Firstly, understanding the impact of our money on the environment is critical for creating a sustainable future. Secondly, while you may have green fog, frustration, overwhelm, and guilt, taking action in small steps will help you through. Thirdly, beyond money, we need to also look at areas like energy, insurance, and investments. And these are all essential for driving the positive change and for moving that money. I'm curious, what did you think about the episode and what were your main takeaways? Is there a topic you want me to dive deeper into? I'd love to hear from you. You can find me at Steph L. Dixon or at Live Wide Awake. If you got something out of the podcast and you want to continue this journey with us, consider subscribing and supporting. I hope that today's conversation stirred something deep within you, ready to awaken. And until next time, live wide awake.